On this episode of Baseball Barbecast, it's time to talk about the National League West. We preview the Colorado Rockies for more minutes than you could ever imagine before digging into that middle group, D-backs, Giants, Padres, and of course, the defending champions, the epicenter of the baseball universe, the Los Angeles Dodgers. All that on this episode of Baseball Barbecast.
Hello and welcome to Baseball Barbacast, the only baseball podcast in the world courageous enough to project the Los Angeles Dodgers division champions. I'm Jake Mintz. That's Jordan Schusterman. And I would like my Medal of Honor, please.
We are breaking some new ground here on this Friday edition of Baseball Barbacast as it is time to preview the National League West. We will continue with our usual format. If you're coming to this Friday edition hoping to hear the good, the bad, the ugly, guess what? The Rockies are going to be bad, the Dodgers are going to be good, and the three other teams will probably provide us with some ugly along the way. As usual, we will work from worst to first, at least by the Fangraphs projected standings and playoff odds. This is particularly relevant for the middle three teams in this division, as it was a year ago. But the first and last teams, you know exactly who we are going to talk about. Jake, any other preamble before we talk about the Rockies of Colorado?
I think the Dodgers' dominance creates an interesting environment in this division because it is irrational for the Diamondbacks or Giants or Padres to think about building a team that can win a division in a way. Like, yes, you should always try, but odds are the Dodgers are going to win this division. And so you're fighting for second place. And I do think that that does impact the way that these teams kind of think about themselves and operate. Now, I think the Giants won't think that way moving forward because Buster Posey, their new president of baseball operations, might just go brr, World Series. Just something to keep in mind, though. But we will begin.
Yeah.
Any thoughts on that?
I would say, well, we'll talk about the Dodgers later, right? The minor pushback to that macro point is they hadn't put the Padres away in the last 2 weeks of the season, and they did, you know, somehow lose the division to the Giants in 2021. So these teams still believe they can win it, but I generally agree with you. As this Dodgers roster gets more and more ridiculous, it does feel like we are fighting for second. But let's begin with the team that will be fighting for fourth in their wildest dreams, and that is the Rockies of Colorado, who Fangraphs projects to win 65 games in 2025. They have 0% chance to win the division, but good news, 0.1% chance to make the postseason. Jake, how did they do a year ago? Well, last year, part of the fun of these doing these previews is we get to go back and watch our previews from a year ago. So I spent yesterday watching a bunch of our season previews from last year. And the Rockies, their over under a year ago was 60.5. We both went over. We were like, they're going to stink, but we're going over. In fact, I said they're going to be so bad, but they could maybe fluke their way into, I don't know, 61 wins. Boy, did I nail that. 61 wins exactly. They do finish in last, of course, one of the worst teams in baseball, but they went over this year. Their over under is even lower, but we'll finish with that. Jake, what did they do this offseason? Rockies always really, really active in the hot stove. How did they improve their ball club after losing a bunch of games?
By praying to the Lord that maybe things would get better. They signed Thairo Estrada to play second base. They brought back Jacob Stallings to play catcher. And they signed infielder, utility man, Kyle Farmer. All right, championship. Now's the time to put it all together. Who's on this team? Behind the dish, Jacob Stallings and Hunter Goodman, who's interesting if you look close enough. First base, Michael Tolia, who did drop some taters. You think he had 25 home runs? He's actually a pretty decent player.
Tolia's a guy to actually, for fantasy purposes, for like he could hit 35 home runs. He is an interesting player. I like Michael Tolia.
Second base, Thairo Estrada, who was hurt and bad last year, but really good in 2023. Third base, Ryan McMahon, who gets to, he is the new face of the Colorado Rockies that Charlie Blackmon has since departed. Someone get this boy a beard. Shortstop, Ezekiel Tovar, who won a gold glove last year and is a genuinely exciting player if he can up his offensive production a little bit. The outfield is Brenton Doyle in center, one of the best to do it. Defensively, Nolan Jones in left, Jordan Beck and Sam Hilliard in right field with Chris Bryant DHing. He's still there and he's presumably going to play baseball for them. He is Anthony Rendon with better feel and more likability. The starting rotation is Herman Marquez, Ryan Feltner, Kyle Freeland, Antonio Senzatella, someone with the last name Blaylock, who I don't know, but it's on the sheet. And then the bullpen is Tyler Kinley, Seth Halverson, Victor Vodnik.
TK. TK.
So, who's Blaylock, right. Jordan?
Bradley Blaylock. They acquired him from the Brewers, I believe, last summer.
Okay. So I just want to, before we do one big question, I just want to get into the macro point of the Rockies. They're one of my favorite baseball teams to think about because they are living in the past in a borderline admirable fashion. And it is because this organization does not particularly care about winning because they sell enough beer and put enough butts in seats that it remains an economically viable operation. Look, the Rockies are just kind of out there in the mountains doing their own freaking thing. They're the only team in baseball, for instance, without an internal stuff plus model, right? Pitch tracking in, to kind of understand how good certain pitches are. They're just vibing, man. They're just freaking vibing. And so not a whole lot changes around there. And that is our one big question. Will anything change around here? No, there's no reason to expect anything to change around there.
Yeah. And I think what's hard with the Rockies is we would love to see a group of super nerds and super scouts and just an awesome collection of baseball minds tackle the Coors Field question, right? We've been saying this for a long time. It would be awesome to see people have the opportunity to try and figure out how to succeed at elevation. Of course, you could also point out that the Rockies have made the postseason more recently than some other franchises that have genuinely been trying a lot harder and spent a lot more money and assembled a way more good baseball players. But right now, because of the status of this division and because of, to your point, the way that they have kind of acted and how they baseball operate, the future is so bleak. Now, with that said, they have at least collected enough players on this team to where, and with the flukiness of having Coors Field being your home ballpark, that I don't really envision a situation where they are going to, you know, lose 120 games like the White Sox. That said, the infrastructure and how far they still have to go to assemble a pitching staff that is anything remotely worthy of winning games all the time, it's so hard to envision them being that good anytime soon. That said, again, like they have collected some interesting position players that are going to be a pain in the ass to play against when you have to go to Colorado in September.
Sure, but they're not good, and that's the whole point. The point of building a baseball team is not to collect interesting position players to be a pain in the ass in September. You're trying to make the playoffs, trying to win a World Series, you're trying to give your fans something to remember and care about, and the Rockies don't do that. The Bud Black, who has been the manager of this team since 2017, is the epitome of tenure. Okay, they have been under 500 every year since 2019. They have been bad, just actively bad, and he just gets to keep being the manager because he's good enough vibes and I guess friends with his bosses. It's crazy. Yeah. Like any other manager in any other team would have gotten canned a while ago. I don't want to advocate for people to lose their jobs, but they've won 68, 59, and 61 games the last 3 years. And he's just like, all right, let's run it back.
Well, but this is the thing. This is why it does feel different now, because I point out that, yeah, they made the postseason in 2017, 2018. The Rockies had never lost 100 games before 2023, and now they've done it in back-to-back years. So that is really exemplifying how they are now objectively so far behind, and no matter how much talent they are able to identify in the position player side, which they have been able to consistently do, whether that was Nolan Jones, whether that was McMahon, who's a good player, whether that was Brenton Doyle, who was, of course, a breakout, Tovar, like, they have some pieces, and they have some more coming. But because the situation of the pitching staff and just how they operate big picture with free agency, with trades, with everything, they just are giving themselves no hope and giving us no reason to believe that they have any hope. And that's why they are, in all likelihood, going to lose 100 games for the third year in a row.
If you ask anybody inside baseball who works for a different team, you say the following question. What do you think about the Rockies? They will smile and laugh. Right?
They're really the smile. Only team that you get that universal response about.
Like, there are people who will shrug their shoulders about how the Marlins are trying to rebuild, or they'll be like, ooh, things are bad in Chicago. Even in Pittsburgh, it's like, that's unfortunate with the lack of investment. If you say Colorado Rockies to a baseball operations official with another team, they will smile and laugh. To me, it's that simple.
Yep. And that is why it is our one big question. Will anything ever change? But let's do a couple key players, because there are players that I enjoy thinking about and watching on this team. But who's your key player?
My key player is Chase Dolander. Chase Dolander was a top 10 pick out of the University of Tennessee a couple years ago, and he has been tracking like a real front of the line, front of the rotation arm, like a legitimate impact starting pitcher. The type of thing the Rockies have not been able to develop and sustain at the big league level. They've done it in spurts with John Gray and Germán Márquez, but they haven't had someone like maintain the level of success. And Dolander has a chance to really be that guy. Now, he's not going to start in the big leagues almost certainly with the team, but he's going to come up at some point. He is the exact type of talent where he needs polishing. He's looked a little inexperienced, understandably, during spring, but there's no question about the stuff. Can the Rockies either, one, help mold this ball of clay into a great pitcher, or two, get out of Chase Dolander's way enough for him to become that? Or will he go the way of other Rockies pitching prospects to fall victim to the horrors of Coors Field?
Yeah, or like if you look at John Gray, like you just end up kind of stuck being fine, because it is really hard to be consistent in that level. I mean, I think we're both big believers in Dolander, and we'll see how quickly he's able to make an impact. Obviously, the talent there is not something they've had. Yeah, I mean, Márquez and Gray, we shouldn't undersell them, but I do think that he's a different level. As far as big picture future, I think Charlie Condon, who they just took in the first round last year and looked terrible after signing, and then now has a wrist injury where I think he's going to miss the start of the season, because I think he got injured diving for a ball. Like, this is not the start to the pro career that you want from your top five pick, who was this historic college player. So that's concerning. So Condon is a big one. But I want to highlight Nolan Jones, mostly just because I was all in on Nolan Jones a year ago. I was totally sold. I thought he was the real deal. He was hitting lefties. He was hitting on the road. He was playing great defense in the outfield. And then he just sucked last year. A lot of it was injuries. I totally recognize that. So I'm willing to give him the mulligan. But I thought he was developing into one of the better outfielders in the National League. He looked like that, even if you adjust for Colorado. I would like to see him kind of get back on track there and kind of add to that position player core.
Nolan Jones had one of the funnier quotes of the winter for me. You know, MLB Network shows up to every spring training facility and they preview the team. And it's always hilarious when they're going to bad teams and they have to be like, there are things to like. Yeah. And so there's a video of, I believe it's Amsinger talking to Nolan Jones. And the quote Nolan Jones said is, the last month of last year showed us what we have. Nolan Jones had... Well, he's basically trying to say that, last September, like, we played well, and I think we have some pieces that could be good over a full season. The Rockies were 10-15 in September a year ago, like, actively not very good. And Nolan Jones specifically had a 74 WRC plus. That's 25% worse than league average. So if the last month of last year showed the Rockies what they had, it's not good, and it's not Nolan Jones.
He's got to just be remembering. I'm just looking at the schedule. They won a series against the Cubs, the D-backs, and the Brewers, but they got whooped by the Dodgers multiple times, whooped by the Braves, whooped by the Tigers. Like, I don't know. But you know what? Again, you're living in a different universe when you're on the Rockies, so good luck.
I love it.
Anyway, 59.5. Again, the number was 60.5 last year. They go over barely. 59.5, Jake, what you got?
Over, baby.
Over, baby. We're staying over. This team, can't buy it. We give you the doom and gloom. Maybe this is the year they do just win 50 games. I don't know. I think they're finding their way to 60 again.
This is great. Over forever. All right. On the Colorado Rockies.
Yes, yes. You got to have to go way lower than that for me to, or I guess way higher than that, I should say.
Quickly, though, right. Just one last thing. Rockies fans, and by fans, I mean people who know who Vinny Castilla is and are watching Brenton Doyle highlights, not people who are going to Coors Field to drink a craft IPA and enjoy the good weather, which is also cool. It's also cool. I feel so bad for you. I'm very sorry that your team does not care about winning games. That sucks. And I'm sure this carousel of below mediocrity is frustrating and a bummer, and hopefully one day it will change.
Let us move to the Giants of San Francisco, who are projected, of course, to be 500 by Fangraphs. Last year,
hell yeah,
they were just below it at 80 and 82. Their over under a year ago was 81.5. We both took the over. We were kind of buying. We were kind of interested. They didn't go that far under 81.5, but they certainly did not go over. They were a blah team as ever, as they have been for the last few seasons since their miraculous 2021 campaign. And this is even with, I mean, Blake Snell was injured and bad for the first half. One of the best pitchers in baseball in the second half. And then Matt Chapman, their other, you know, big addition. Awesome. I mean, Matt Chapman was fantastic. What a player. What a great guy to have at third base. For 154 games, 7 wins, 7 WAR on Baseball Reference. Oh my God, how bad could the Giants be? I guess they weren't bad, but they were below. They were below 500. I guess that qualifies as bad. So that sucked. And then they fired Farhan because that
who?
They you know spent a lot of money and they were still not very good. Farhan Zaidi is now, of course, back working with the Dodgers. So who do they bring in this offseason? Or I guess at the end. I think it was at the end of September. Buster Posey is now in charge of baseball operations. Buster Posey is here. And what moves did he make in his first winter in charge? Not a lot, but two very big ones. They bring in Willy Adames on a long-term free agent contract. I believe that was 7 years, like 182, I think. And then Justin Verlander, bringing him in for his age 42 season. We don't see a lot of pitchers getting to their age 42 season, but he will be doing it in 2025. They also broke up the Rogers twins, trading lefty Tyler Rogers to Cincinnati. That was basically a salary dump, but it did give their bullpen a little bit of a new look. Jake, who is on the Giants?
Behind the dish, Patrick Bailey, one of the best defensive catchers in the game. Can he hit? Maybe enough. He's not going to win a silver slugger, but he will continue to win gold gloves. First base is Lamont Wade, late night Lamont. He plays 110 games a year and has 400 plate appearances and kicks the snot out of right-handed hitting and is perfectly solid. Second base this year will be Tyler Fitzgerald, who had one of the more inexplicable breakout rookie campaigns of 2024, finishing the year with 15 homers in 96 games and a 136 OPS plus. Okay, 100 is average. Like, he was legitimately good. Surprised he got no rookie of the year votes, if we're being honest. The left side of the infield is where this bread will be buttered. Matt Chapman at third, who they extended at the end of last year. Willy Adames, who they went out and got during the winter to be the culture setter of this team. The outfield, Elliot Ramos in left field, the first player ever, the first right-handed hitter to hit a ball into McCovey Cove at the end of last year. A truly historic moment. Center field, Jung-Hoo Lee, Korean Dynamo, who they signed last winter for a big chunk of change. He got hurt almost right away and missed most of the season. He is healthy and back and ready to show us what he's got. Right field will be Mike Yastrzemski and Luis Matos. DH will be Wilmer Flores. What I did not just mention there is the bench and the depth of this team, which frankly stinks. Starting pitchers, Logan Webb, Justin Verlander, Robbie Ray, Jordan Hicks, Kyle Harrison, and personal cheese ball, Landon Birdsong should be getting a little bit more of a shot. I think that guy's pretty good. Bullpen, Ryan Walker, Camilla Duvall, Tyler Rogers, and Sean Gelly, the tallest boy.
Literally, tallest player in baseball history. Just casually a Giants long man.
What, a giant man?
Of course.
A man?
He's a giant. A giant long man. Sorry.
Like, time out. Sean Gelly, the tallest player in baseball history, being a long man on the Giants, is one of those moments, one of those facts, one of those things that makes me believe in God, right? Yeah. It's like, there's no way there's not a higher power up there, that the tallest boy is a long man on the Giants. He could be a, you know, he could be a back end starter on the Reds and we'd be like, that guy's tall. Let's appreciate poetry when it slaps us in the face.
I agree. I just wanted to clarify, because you mixed up the names and I wanted to make sure I get your breakout pick right. You said Landon Birdsong. Does that mean you're a Landon Roop fan or a Hayden Birdsong fan? I just want to make sure we're on the record because you said Landon Birdsong and I don't know which one you actually are into because both of those guys have some real supporters. I'm more of a Landon Roop guy, but it sounds like you're more of a Birdsong.
I'm more of a Birdsong guy. Yeah.
Okay, so you're a Hayden Birdsong. Okay, you got it. Just making sure.
Thank you.
That was like a legit clarification, not just making fun of you messing up names.
That's a great clarification. And when you're reading all these names, sometimes your brain just gets jumbled. I saw Landon Rupp and I saw Hayden Birdsong and I just sandwiched them together into one single person.
That's fine. What is our one big question for the San Francisco Giants? I mean, it has to be about Buster Posey. He's not behind the plate anymore, but Buster Posey taking over here is a pretty astonishing sequence of events. It makes a lot of sense if you think about it for 5 seconds, where it's like, well, the Giants need to get back to when they were really relevant and always winning. And who defines that in the 21st century? Buster Posey, more than anybody. Not just when they were winning World Series in the early part of his career, but even in his final year when he was unbelievably good for the 2021 Giants. You know, they won 150 games and they won the division. And then we know what happened after that. But the point is, him as a baseball operations person is so interesting because, you know, I think when Buster Posey, I think everyone would have been like, well, yeah, Buster Posey will probably be a manager someday if he wants to stick around. And instead, he has just gone express lane to the top of the organization. Part of that is because he was already heavily involved in the ownership group, which is an interesting part of this. He made a lot of money off the field and was able to be a big part of the Giants ownership. And it seems like when they decided to move on from Farhan Zaidi, Buster was like, give me the rock. I'm in. Let's do this. I'm going to be in charge now. So what that looks like on a daily basis, how he talks about this team, in because so far, all he's gotten to do is talk about signing Willie Adames and Verlander and be like, we want to get back to Giants baseball. We, you know, want to, you know, be relevant again and compete for championships. And that all sounds good and is really cool during the season. If the Giants are in fourth place and 5 games under on May 15th, how do we assess Buster Posey? How does Buster Posey handle that? Does he make panic trades in May or June? Does he blow it up? Does he fire Bob Melvin? Like, there are so many different interesting ways that this could go. And at the very crucial point in the franchise, of course, we'll talk about some of the actual players on the team that I know are more important to their success. But I think that Posey, from a narrative standpoint, because of what he means to this franchise, is hard to deny as one of the more compelling parts of this team.
Do we start to see preferences? Do we see a fingerprint of what they like, what they don't like, what kind of players they're interested in, besides he's a good guy? And that is my general concern with the Buster Posey led Giants, is that he kind of just hired a bunch of people who were involved with the 2010 to 2015-ish Giants teams, and the game moves forward, and trying to replicate the past is not going to work. And if the people involved in building the 2025, 2026, 2027 Giants are trying to just copy and paste what they did back in the day, oh boy, is that going to get ugly and get ugly quick. And so I want to believe in Buster Posey, but this offseason does not help his case. Adames and Verlander are interesting and fine. Their lack of interest in adding any depth on the offensive side behind their starting lineup was just kind of bizarre. There are no low risk, interesting adds. Like, oh man, if they fix some things with that guy's swing, like that just doesn't exist really with this group. I guess besides Gerard Encarnacion is maybe an exception with that.
But he was there last year. They already had him.
I know. I'm just thinking about. So yeah, I'm just thinking about players who like fit that that part of it. I just don't know, man.
But it is an interesting point because I'm not going to write off Buster Posey. Like, I think saying it's not going to work, they're going to be a failure. Like, I mean, you're welcome to have that opinion. I have no idea how this is going to go, but I do think it's a great contrast because for Farhan Zaidi and ironically the 2021 Giants, so much of it was about building depth, finding pieces that fit together. Whereas the strategy this offseason was just like, who's famous? Can we finally get these guys to sign with us? Yes. All right. Boom. Awesome. Willie Adames came here. Oh, Justin Verlander. Everybody knows him. And that was it. Like that. There, to your point, there weren't like, okay, oh, that's an interesting little bit. Like, Posey has it. Maybe at some point he will get to that point. But so far, it has been very basic level of offseason activity where it's just like, all right, who's at the top of the list? Who's, you know, won a Cy Young Award? Boom, boom. All right, there's our offseason. And that might work. I'm high on Justin Verlander this year. I still believe he can be good. I think it's a good fit in the ballpark. I think what he did at the very, very end of last season, once he was healthy, was encouraging. And we both love Willie Adames. I think the fit in the ballpark is probably not as good as it was in Milwaukee, but I still think that him and Matt Chapman on the left side of the infield is pretty sweet. So there are some good players here. Let's get to those key players, though, because there are a couple other ones that are probably going to have an even bigger impact on whether or not they're good this year.
I'm going to go with Jung Hoo Lee. So Jung Hoo Lee appeared in 37 games last year, which is more than I remember, to be honest with you, right? Like, I just remember him running into a wall and messing up his shoulder, I believe, very early on in the season. I guess that wasn't the case. May 12th. But
that's pretty early. That's pretty early.
Pretty early. Yeah. I mean, he was fine. Like, he didn't really hit for power, which was one of the concerns that we had about Jung Hoo Lee. And remember, I mean, they gave this guy 6 years, $113 million the winter before. I mean, that's a legitimate investment. And so he's my key player because, like, we still don't know what he is. We still haven't seen it over a full season. And he could be a legitimately impact center fielder, or he could be a big waste of money.
Yeah, I'm totally with you there. I think he's someone that, while the overall line was not great, there were three things that were very encouraging. He didn't strike out at all. He had one of the lowest swing and miss rates of any hitter in baseball. He hit the ball harder at the highest level than we really expected. I think he had some balls closer to 110 exit velocity. I know already this spring he's hit the ball pretty hard. And he looked pretty good in center field, you know, before he crashed into a wall. And so if he is going to be a good center fielder and he is going to give you some value on the bases and he is going to not strike out, there is a good player in there. But to your point, it's 40 games that we've seen so far. He still has to prove it over a larger sample. We haven't seen him like adjust to pitchers. We haven't seen pitchers adjust to him. Long way to go. He's still 26, but I do agree on the offensive side, he is very important. I'm going to go with Robbie Ray. He just feels like kind of the forgotten man in this mix. Obviously, he's someone that gave me a lot of feelings for better or for worse in his Mariners tenure for reasons that were not always his fault. But Robbie Ray did also then immediately blow out and came back last year from surgery. But by the time he came back and made seven starts, the Giants were not especially relevant. But he's still 33 and like he's making a lot of money. And like a really good version of Robbie Ray does changed the complexion of this rotation in a pretty real way that I don't think is really being acknowledged, because when you bring in Verlander and you already have Logan Webb as kind of the face of the team and we're still kind of figuring out what the hell Jordan Hicks is and you have some of these younger pitchers, Ray is somehow lost in the shuffle here. And I do think that there is a version of him that could be really, really, really good for them that elevates this rotation, especially now that they don't have Blake Snell. At the very least, could kind of get it back to a level that was closer to what it was last year, where there were parts of it that were certainly disappointing. That has more to do with guys like Hicks and Harrison. But I think Robbie Ray is a guy who, again, Cy Young winner, that is just doesn't really feel to be very discussed or relevant right now. And I just wanted to spotlight him.
Over under 79.5 hammering the under on that.
Yeah. I don't know if I'm going that far under, but they need to prove us wrong at this point. So I'm going to go slight under here. I think 78, 79 is about right.
I will hammer the under on 71.5.
Oh my God. Well, that's going to require like injuries and trades. And I mean, you're basically, sure. Honestly, what you're kind of saying is like a Toronto season. But that yeah. seems really hard to they even still won 74 games. 71 is like
it's whatever. A disrespectful thing to say. Saying 71 wins is disrespectful, and I'm going to stand by it.
I like that you're going out of your way to, again, the over-unders are there for a reason. You don't have to make them harder for yourself. But anyway, all right, we're both going to go under, and we'll see if we'll see how that goes. All right, we're going to take a quick break. When we return, Padres, D-backs, and who's that other team? We'll get to them later. We'll be right back on Baseball Barbecue.
And welcome back, Baseball Barbacast. Oh, look, my dad's here.
Is he? Richard in the house?
No.
All right. Let's talk about the Padres of San Diego. They are only projected to win 82 games. FanGraphs giving them 35% chance to make the playoffs, 4% chance to win the division. They got a whole lot closer than that last year, as their over-under a year ago was 81.5. Remember, a lot of questions. They had a very new look team around their core pieces. We both said over. You were like, yes, I'm in. The Padres are going to be back. I know they were so disappointing in 2023, but like they're going to get back to the playoffs, even though I might end up sounding stupid. No, you nailed it, Jake. This team was awesome. 93 wins. They were so painfully close to beating the Dodgers. I mean, just again, like I mentioned this with the Brewers on Wednesday, the feeling of the Bowers Frelick, you know, we're about to be the Mets back to back. When Tatis hits that grand slam off Walker Buehler, it's 6-0 in game 3. And they did end up winning that game, to be clear, to go up 2-1 in the series. But that was the last time they scored in the series. And even though they won that game, from there on for the next 25 innings or whatever, that was it. That was the moment where Dave Roberts thought he was going to get fired, pretty much, as he admitted in Stephanie Abstein's fantastic profile of him at Sports Illustrated, which I encourage everyone to check out. And then from there on, the Dodgers were like, all right, time to win the World Series. And leaving the Padres in a very precarious position, most notably as we enter an offseason in which they did literally nothing for 3 months with a legal mess hanging over their franchise involving the ownership and Sheil Seidler, the widow of the late owner Peter Seidler, and the Seidler brothers, who have since become the control people, or I guess John Seidler become the control person owner. There is still some sort of legal dispute going on involving this, but as we speak now, it seems like the Seidler brothers will maintain control of the team. And at the end of the offseason, the Padres did finally start doing things. They brought in Jason Hayward. Connor Joe is kind of depth pieces on the offense. Gavin Sheets is having a huge spring training. Bring back Elias Diaz to catch. Kyle Hart, they bring him over from Korea. And then Nick Pivetta is the big signing. I love that match. They kind of get him very late to add to this rotation. But a lot of this team still looks very similar. And who is still on this roster? Oh, Jose Iglesias. I didn't even mention him. Jose Iglesias is on this team too. But who else is on this team?
Oh my God. Behind the dish, it is Elias Diaz and Luis Camposano. First base, Luis Arraez making contact and pissing off people who think about baseball too hard. Second base, Jake Cronenworth, Manny Machado at third, Xander Bogaerts at shortstop. Left field will be Jason Hayward, Connor Joe platoon to try and replace the departed Jerickson Profar, who banged last year. Center field, Jackson Merrill, one of the game's brightest young stars. Right field, Fernando Tatis Jr., another one of those. The DH is me and you could DH, buddy. Like, if we believe in the Gavin Sheets spring training breakout, then it'll be him. But besides that, I mean, it'll kind of an empty hole in the mix. Starting pitching, Dylan Cease, Michael King, Yu Darvish, Nick Pivetta, Steven Kolek, Kyle Hart, bullpen, Robert Suarez, Jason Adam, Adrian Morihone, Jeremiah Estrada. One big question. Can the Stars and Scrubs approach to major league roster building actually work? It's not just that there's no depth here. The lack of depth is like creeping its way up into the actual starting group, right? Where there's not really a left fielder, and there's not really a DH, and there's not really a five starter. And if guys get hurt, it could get ugly really quickly. Do you think this is gonna go well? I mean,
that's the thing. We are still looking at a top of the roster where if you just look at, you know, 1 through 10 and 1 through 12, you're like, damn, it's a pretty good team. We all, and yes, Profar was a huge part of that. We'll get to him here in a little second. But like, remember how we were all talking about the Padres? That was the sexy pick to win the World Series. It was the Padres. That was who people were like, yeah, Dodgers, they don't have enough pitching. They're not going to be able to do it. And when Tatis hits that grand slam, we're all like, yeah, see, Padres are better. And what has happened after the fact? Since the Dodgers won the World Series, all they talk about is how, oh my God, we just had to beat the Padres. They're like, Yankees, eh, whatever. Like, we just had to beat the Padres. That's how they viewed it. And so a lot of those players are still here. Profar is not. But to your point, it's just like they are just a couple injuries from a really, really sketchy thing. Or the top five or so will be so good that you just will right. have to turn off the innings where, you know, 7, 8, 9 is hitting.
And we saw the two ends of this in the last two seasons. 2023, it's a star-studded roster that doesn't make the playoffs because the depth sucks. 2024, enough guys stay healthy and perform that they're, you know, a few coin flips and getting too nervous in the NLDS away from maybe winning a World Series.
Yeah.
And that's the ends of the spectrum. Where do I think it falls this year? I'll tell you in a second with the over-under. My key player is Manny Machado. Manny Machado signed an 11-year contract extension in the beginning of the 2023 season for $350 million. 11 years. I don't like that. You know what? I'll say it. I don't like that contract. Don't like it one bit. He is entering his age 32 season. He is not a bad player. He's still Manny Machado. He's still pretty good. But he is no longer one of the best 20 players in the sport. He is probably one of the best 50 players in the sport. But the numbers are kind of slowly starting to slide, understandably, as he ages and ages and ages. Can Manny Machado be a monster again? Can he turn the clock back? Can he make me feel better about the next 9 years of his contract? I think that will be a big deal for this Padres team that needs its stars to play like stars.
I think that is a good take. I think that Manny Machado's quiet decline is important. However, allow me to introduce a player who is the same age and is under contract for the same number of years and has been a bad player for the last 2 years, and that is Xander Bogaerts. Xander Bogaerts is also under contract through 2033. But I am not concerned. At this point, 2030, we know it's bad. That's fine. I have said this about when we talk about free agents. I don't care about that far in the future. It's stupid to talk about. I am concerned about right now, where he is now the shortstop again, as Ha-Seong Kim is gone. And he's my key player, along with Jake Cronenworth, because if you don't have Jerks and Profar being one of the best hitters in the National League anymore, not that I'm saying he absolutely would have done that again this year, he was covering up for the fact that Cronenworth and Bogaerts were below average hitters. Cronenworth they were both close to league average, but when they aren't giving you a ton of defensive value necessarily in their respective defensive positions, having an OPS around 700 when they're making the money that they're making on these extensions, it's just not going to be good enough. So both of those guys are going to have to get back to being above average bats if this offense I mean, because I agree, like Machado, yes, when we're saying it's even, he's making even more per year and it's also that long-term deal. But I trust that he's still going to be a 3-4 or 5-4 player. Bogarts and Cronenworth, if that's closer to 1 or 2, it's just not going to be good enough if you're not having God-level profile. Now, yes, we are super high on Merrill and Tatis. Maybe those guys becoming 6-7 win players alongside each other is going to be enough to keep this offense afloat. Totally fine. I'm high on Luis Arraez here. I think he was injured last year and still managed to hit 320 or whatever. I think he's going to be awesome again in his final year with the Padres. But I just think Bogarts and Cronenworth, they have to be better. They cannot just be average Joes hanging out, and especially now that Bogarts is playing shortstop. That is not good enough for a team that has no depth behind them.
Over-under is 85.5.
I'm going to ride one more time with the San Diego Padres, and I think this is where we're going to differ, but I could be wrong. I still have not totally decided whether I'm picking them to make the playoffs, but I'm still going to go over on 85.5 for at least one more year. Next year, we're going to have some tough conversations for sure, as a lot of these players. Michael King, holy crap, right? Like, that's another huge one that needs to be mentioned in terms of how good he was in the second half. This pitching staff is high upside, high risk. I'm going over. I think there's enough talent here. Am I going to pick them to make the playoffs? I'm not sure yet.
I will take the under. I just don't think there's enough depth. I think two injuries to the wrong guys sink this team.
Yep.
And I am really sad about that because Padres fans deserve a winner. And they've kind of gotten it. And I just see darkness approaching in a horrifying way.
Which is, it's like, it can't go worse than 2023. I mean, 2023, I guess it can. 2023
what are you talking
was so
about?
Bleak considering.
Yes, it can.
I'm just saying. It can go, it can. Way worse. I'm just saying that, like, the hype with the 2023 team with Juan, like, that's one of the most disappointing teams of the 21st century. This year is not coming with the same amount of hype and expectations, even though I still think there's awesome players on this team. And I totally agree with your bigger point that they're still going to sell out like every game. Like, it is still going to be an awesome atmosphere. Like, there is still a lot of reasons to want to go to the Padres games. But I mean, I see the risk for sure. I do think that there is it is going to be a delicate balance. I just think that they have enough to still be very good this season. Let's move to the Arizona Diamondbacks. What an interesting season for the Snakes. Fangraphs projects them to win 86 games, 60% chance to make the playoffs, 10% chance to win the division. What happened a year ago? Their over-under coming off a World Series appearance was 84.5. We were both like, that even seems optimistic. We both took the under, and the Snakes made us look silly. They won 89 games. Their offense was the best in baseball by some metrics, the very basic metric of runs per game. They were scoring more runs than the other team. The pitching, though, not as awesome. And that kind of ended up putting them in a position where they were just leaking games when they couldn't. Still won 89, which is a great season, but their 89 was not more than the Mets and Braves 89, as the D-backs were eliminated in one of the stranger fashions we have seen at the end of the year on Monday, as they were sitting at home watching their season end in very strange fashion. So that sucked for the Snakes, but it was a much more impressive, you know, kind of encore to what the Rangers did after going to the 2023 World Series. So you got to give them credit to the Diamondbacks for maintaining that momentum. They continue to do that this winter as they shock the baseball world and give Corbin Burnes an absolute boatload of money in a situation where Corbin Burnes wanted to live in Arizona, wanted to be a Diamondback, and Scott Boras convinced Ken Kendrick, hey, he wants to be on your team. You still got to pay him $200 million. And Ken Kendrick's like, fine, awesome. I'll have Corbin Burnes on my team. Sounds good. They traded for Josh Naylor. They brought back Randall Grichuk. They did not trade Jordan Montgomery. That's another one who was basically the whole offseason. It was like, they're going to trade him. They're going to trade him. They're going to trade him. Just like Nolan Arenado. That did not happen. So he is still on the team for better or for worse. Who else is on the Arizona Diamondbacks, Jake Mintz?
Behind the dish is Gabriel Moreno and potentially Adrian Del Castillo, who is one of the more underrated prospects in all of baseball, in my opinion. First base is Josh Naylor, who they acquired over the winter. Ketel Marte at second. Gino Suarez at third base. Geraldo Perdomo at shortstop, who got an extension over the winter. Really interesting player, Perdomo. The outfield is Lourdes Gurriel Jr. in left, Jake McCarthy in center, and Corbin Carroll in right field. The DH mix will be some Del Castillo, Randall Grichuk, who they brought back, Pavin Smith. They did let Jock Peterson walk in free agency. He was kind of the everyday DH, mostly against right-handed pitching, but he banged. The rotation is Corbin Burnes, Zach Gallen, Merrill Kelly, Eduardo Rodriguez, Brandon Pfaadt, and Jordan Montgomery. And the bullpen, which was kind of the Achilles heel last year, AJ Puck, Justin Martinez, the Gink, Kevin Ginkle, and I believe that is Ryan Thompson, the guy who throws bizarrely from the side. My big question about this group, is this pitching staff actually good?
Yeah, it's a great question. I think you go back and look at what sunk them last year, and obviously we're going to add Corbin Burnes into the mix, which is a big part of this equation. But their starting pitching last year, 27th in ERA. Their relievers were 25th in ERA. So think about that, right? I mean, that is a pretty astonishing example of, like, we were fairly optimistic about the rotation last year. With Gallen and Kelly and even adding Montgomery late and Erod. And then because of the injuries, because of how awful Montgomery was, because Pfaadt's ERA was not pretty, it was not a good rotation last year. Are we counting enough on Gallen to be better in his last year under contract to Corbin Burnes making that big of a difference? And then what are we getting from Pfaadt in his third year, from Eduardo Rodriguez in his first full healthy season with the Diamondbacks? Because I think people, once they signed Burnes, it was like, oh my God, now it's one of the best rotations in baseball. You could very reasonably argue that Corbin Burnes is that good that he can elevate an average staff to making it a very, very good rotation. Like, that's a reasonable argument. But I'm with you on this big picture question, because it's not that hard to see it underwhelming, even if you count in Burnes as being awesome.
It is very easy to be like, Corbin Burnes and Zach Gallen are starting game 1 and 2. Yes, that is true. Like, those guys are really good. We love Zach Gallen. He was worse than you think last year in 148 innings with a 3.65, 15% better than league average. Whereas in previous seasons, he'd been in the Cy Young conversation. He did not receive any Cy Young consideration a year ago. Well, my real concern is below Gallen, where a year ago, the Diamondbacks were underwhelming, frankly. Brandon Pfaadt, who was outstanding in the World Series in 2023, threw 181 innings that were just whatever. They weren't horrible, but they weren't actively good. And then below Pfaadt, Merrill Kelly, who will be 36 this year, managed just 73 innings as he had shoulder issues. That's always good. And was more just kind of league average during that time. But again, he's going to be 36. Jordan Montgomery, catastrophe, still on the team somehow.
Yeah, I think he will be more useful, but he's also not projected to have a rotation spot right now. So I don't even think he's going to have the opportunity. I think last year was doomed from the start, not having spring training and everything. But Erod is the one I'm maybe even more concerned about, even though, yeah, I kind of liked that deal a year ago. I mean, he also was injured last year and also was bad when he was pitching. So what are we getting out of that guy? Because it's easy to just be like, oh, well, they get much money and we've seen him be good, but not with the Diamondbacks. So, and that's another one that's definitely a question mark.
That's also a shoulder strain, right? Yeah. Good rule of thumb, people. Good rule of shoulder. The shoulder should make you concerned more than really any other thing for a hitter. It's, what is it? It's hands and wrists for hitters and shoulders for pitchers.
I feel like back issues are the ones that terrify. That's probably all players.
That's all people.
That's all people. That's true. So rotation, that's our bigger question. But there are a couple other key players that we definitely wanted to highlight, because again, the offense is going to look fairly different from the team that scored the most runs in baseball last year. So I know Corbin Carroll had a fascinating year last year. He is sort of an obvious one as one of the faces of the franchise, but I think it's a fair pick as a key player, it seems like.
Yeah, I will go with Corbin Carroll. He had, oh my goodness gracious, he had a 608 OPS on July 6th. Okay.
He sucked. It was not good. And this is, remember, like this is as Gunnar Henderson, his rookie of the year, you know, compadre from the year before, this is as he's becoming like MVP candidate. And it's like, what the hell's wrong with Corbin Carroll? Gunnar Henderson looks amazing. But then it was like, oh, there he is. I don't know if you have his splits the rest of the way, but holy crap.
So if you go, I'm just going to do pre and post All-Star game because it's just sure. easier. He had 5 homers before the All-Star game, 2 of which were the day before, right? So if you want to do that split and do like July 13th, which is the Saturday before the All-Star game, he had 3 homers total. After the All-Star game, he popped 17 of them and had a 919 OPS with 17 steals and just looked like Corbin Carroll.
So let's do a full season of that second half, maybe. How about that? I mean, again, it's not like we don't think he can. He basically did the year before.
Sure. And to me, it's, do we look back at 2024 first half Corbin Carroll and that's a total blip? That's an aberration? Or is he going to have to, like, does he have to prove it to us? Now, if it had gone the other way and he was amazing for the first half and terrible for the second half, I think I'd be more concerned. The idea that he fixed whatever was wrong and sustained it over the second half is encouraging. Still, like, is he a top 10 player, a top 30 player, or a top 50 player? I think last year answered that question for Gunnar Henderson, who is a top 10 player in the world. Corbin Carroll, I don't feel that way about, and I want to. And so I think him elevating his game or returning to that level is a huge part of the D-back season.
Totally valid. I'm going to go with Josh Naylor. I think you could highlight a couple guys in the bullpen, AJ Puck in his first full season, kind of anchoring that you know, relief core. Justin Martinez, another young arm that's exciting. But I'm going to go with Naylor for kind of the same reason I went with Bogarts and Cronenworth, which is Christian Walker and Jock Peterson are not on this team anymore. And they are kind of asking Josh Naylor to replace both of them. I know they're going to be counting on Pavin Smith and Del Castillo in sort of that DH role to fill in for Jock. But Josh Naylor, in the final year of his contract, having been in Cleveland for a long time, I obviously watched it up close. This is they're really counting on him to just kind of keep on keeping on. And I get it. I mean, he has been really productive. He hit 31 homers last year, but it's, I don't know. I'm like a tad low on Josh Naylor. And I think that the level of consistency that they were getting with Christian Walker, especially defensively, which Naylor's okay on his best day, but is obviously way worse than Christian Walker on defense. And I just think that, that's really important for this offense to continue to be well above average. I think it's a pretty huge bet that Naylor in his contract year is going to kind of put up All-Star level production again. I think he's capable of it. I just think we might end up underrating how good Jock was and how reliable Christian Walker was as well.
Over under is 86.5.
Oh boy. So
great line. That's a great line.
It is a great line, man. I mean, I've been torn on who I'm more optimistic about, the Padres and the Diamondbacks recently. I think, oh, man. You know, I think I'm going to go slight under. Slight under? Is that right? So what I'm dealing with, if you listen to the Mondays, that I'm also kind of worried about the Mets. So I think I'm going to end up picking the Padres to make the playoffs. And that last spot in the NL, I'm going to be between Arizona and the Mets. And I don't want to decide right now. So I think I'm going to, I don't remember what I said for the Mets. I think I said under. I'm going to say over for the D-backs and say that them and the Mets are going to end up tied again, but the Diamondbacks will get the tiebreaker this time. Oh, there we go. There's a fun, I just came up with that on the fly. There we go. Diamondbacks and Mets will have the same record again, but this time the Diamondbacks will get in and the Mets will be left out. There we go.
I'm going to take the under on this okay. one. My playoff teams are like my wildcard teams, excuse me, are the two NL East teams and the Cubs. So I can't think any of these teams are good, but I'm going to take the under on 86.5. The pitching concerns me both in the starting rotation and in the bullpen. Justin Martinez, who throws 1,000 miles an hour, is another important player for them. Like, can he be a dominant closer? We'll see.
dominant late end guy. We'll see. I love the bones of this team. I just have real issues with the lack of impact pitching depth.
Yeah, totally valid. All right. Well, this is really setting up to figure out how far ahead the Dodgers are going to be based on Jake taking the under on everybody except for the Rockies. We love the Rockies. We're going to take a break. And when we return, it is time to talk about those Dodgers of Los Angeles.
And welcome back to Baseball Barbercast. The time has come to talk about the only team in baseball that actually matters. The Colorado Rockies. No, I'm kidding. The Los Angeles Dodgers. What did they do last year?
They went under. Their over-under was 103.5. And we took the under. We said there's no way. Something's going to go wrong. Like, getting to 104 wins is hard. As all the hype, oh my God, you signed Ohtani. Oh, wow, Glasnow. We're like, they ain't winning that many games. Sorry. We're concerned about the pitching. This is what we said last year. We said, this bullpen is a real ragtag group. I don't know what the defense might suck with Mookie Betts and Muncie and Gavin Lux. Like, this is not good. We're going under. And guess what? We were right. They only won 98 games. Was it the most wins in baseball? Yeah, but they didn't win 104. So we're feeling good. They go into the postseason. We're like, Dodgers, no way. Tatis hits that grand slam. We're like, here we go. They're gone again. This is embarrassing. We all get to point and laugh at the Dodgers again. And then they just didn't stop winning, and they won the World Series, and they looked like the best team, and that was it. And then what did they do after that? They were like, oh, that was fun. Let's do it again. Let's spend more money. Let's get more awesome players. Let's sign Blake Snell. Let's get Roky Sasaki. Let's bring back Teoscar Hernandez. Bring in Michael Conforto, even though we don't really need him. Let's get Tanner Scott. We would never pay relievers this much money, but now we can. We'll bring back Blake Treinen for 2 years. We'll give Tanner Scott the fourth largest reliever contract ever. We'll sign Kirby Yates because nobody else wants to sign him for some reason. We'll sign this Korean second baseman, Haesung Kim, and send him to AAA. Who cares? We don't even give him $12 million and have him in Oklahoma City. There's no problem with that. And of course, they have a bunch of other awesome pitchers coming back from injury, like Dustin May and Tony Gonsolin, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Jake, this is to your they are projected to win 96 games. They have 98% playoff odds. I believe Pakoda gave them an even 100, but 83% chance to win the division, which still feels low. Who is on this baseball team? Why are these odds so high, Jake?
Behind the dish, it is Will Smith and the unkillable Austin Barnes, who, what, like, does he have compromising naked pictures of Andrew Friedman, like, no, hidden under a mattress?
He has something much more simple. Clayton Kershaw, still under contract.
Amazing.
It's very simple. Austin Barnes is still there, but Will Smith is the catcher.
Honestly, like, kudos to Austin Barnes. Absolutely. Getting to still do this every day. Because players like him who get to continue to be on good teams, even though they're bad at hitting, they must be good hangs and add value in other ways that we don't see. And so I think in some ways that is a more impressive accomplishment than being skilled at hitting a ball moving towards you. First base, Freddie Freeman. Remember him? Bum ankle, not a bum hitter. Second base looks like it's going to be some Tommy Edman and Kike Hernandez. Third base, Max Muncy. Shortstop, Mookie Betts. Left field, Michael Conforto. Right field, Teoscar Hernandez, who they brought back. And then center field will be James Outman, Andy Pages, and Max Muncy. That is a bad idea. And Tommy Edman. Like, when Edman is not playing second, I imagine he'll spend some time in center field. The DH is Shohei Ohtani. Think. Mm-hmm. Rotation, Yamamoto, Glasnow, Snell, Roky Sasaki, Dustin May. At some point, Ohtani will get back. At some point, Kershaw will get back. They also have Tony Gonsolin somewhere and Ben Kasperias, who started a World Series game, will start the year in AAA. The Dodgers are an absolute joke. The one big question about the Dodgers, how does it go wrong?
Yeah.
What is let me ask this way.
Yeah.
What is a bad regular season look like?
I mean, I feel like we just saw it last year, although it would have included, I mean, a bad regular season, maybe even more than this year than last year, is having to sweat in the final week, which did happen, right? They had to win that series against the Padres to really lock it down last season. Now, last year, I was like, well, without unprecedented injuries, I mean, there's no way this team's going to, you know, miss the playoffs. They did have unprecedented injuries, and they won the World Series anyway. I think, to me, it's hard to imagine, because last year, like, we felt like we were talking about one of the most hyped teams ever. And for them to deliver in some respects and then totally not deliver in others because of the injuries makes it feel like this, and now that they actually won, now it's elevated to a totally different degree, to where this is the year where people are like, we're coming for that Mariners wins record, you know? And the over-under being the same as last year, which is fascinating, right? 103.5, that seems to be an acknowledgement of all the things that can go wrong, right? This, the 103.5 feels like, 103.5 feels like they're saying people will get hurt and they won't win 110 games. Whereas last year, it was like, we think they're going to win 105, and then they ended up winning 98. I don't know, man.
I mean,
they have built this, the talk about the depth, all the depth that those three other teams that think they're decent don't have, they're here. They're in Oklahoma City.
It's very English Premier League. It's like Man City signing, yeah, you know, the third best English defensive midfielder and then never playing him so that he can't be on West Ham, you know?
So I will say,
there's one thing about last year. It's easy to forget now, like, Mookie Betts missed time. Max Muncy missed a lot of time.
Oh, yeah.
It's not as if all of their position players were healthy the whole year. You know, I mean, Otani missed two games and Freddie missed like a week and a half. And it's hard to imagine the injuries crushing them as bad as they did last year, especially in the pitching side. And so I don't know how they don't make the playoffs. Like, I can't envision it.
The fun, totally nonsensical narrative that I am excited to peddle if they lose like three games in a row is Clayton McCullough was the secret sauce.
Oh,
everything goes in the toilet without Clayton McCullough at first base. Their fundamentals, they have like the worst fielding percentage, the worst base running, the worst, you know, yeah, worst defense. Everything, they're getting caught stealing all the time. They are, we're getting like miscommunication with game, like catchers are getting crossed up. Like, I don't know how many of these things Clayton McCullough is in charge of, who's now the manager of the Marlins. But I just think that like morale is low because like he was everybody's favorite coach. Again, Dave Roberts is awesome. This is a disrespectful Dave Roberts take, but it's that Clayton McCullough was really holding this thing together and that they are struggling without him. And by the way, the same thing we said last year, there is a version where this is a bad defensive team. Like, even more than last year, Teo and Conforto in the corners, with Mookie Betts trying to play shortstop, with Max Muncy at third, with second base kind of being a revolving door, and with Freddie Freeman, who is still a good first baseman, but probably not as good as he used to be. There's a version where this defense is bad. But other than that, to your point, the only things that went like fully right last year for them in the regular season was Ohtani having one of the greatest seasons of all time, Teoscar Hernandez, and I mean, that's kind of the only thing that like hit, that like maxed out. Freddie was very good. It was not Freddie's best. Yeah, Freddie at the end, obviously. But it was a notable step down in production from his first 2 years with the Dodgers, I would say. And then on the mound, what went right? Gavin Stone until he had surgery, and Tyler Glasnow until he was out. Other than that, like, they got 18 starts from Yamamoto, right? James Paxton threw 90 innings for them. Bueller was awful in the regular season. The bullpen was not, Evan Phillips was not as good as he was the previous years. A lot of things went wrong. So many things went wrong for them, which is why, spoiler alert, I'm taking the over on 103.5 this year. I think they're going to have more things go right for them. And I think even with injuries that we factor in, even with some underperformance here, even if the defense sucks and the base running sucks and everything, all the secondary stuff is terrible because Clayton McCullough is gone, I still think that this is 105 wins. I think I really do see this year, I'm way more sold than last year.
Yeah,
I agree. Not just because they won the World Series, because of the roster that is now I'm looking at.
It's really hard to pick a key player on this team because they're kind of all key players. I will go with Mookie Betts trying to play shortstop. They did it last year. It was bad enough that they had to pivot away from it in the middle of the season. They got Tommy Edman to do it in the playoffs. I guess Edman is another good pick for this, considering he might have to fill in at a lot of different positions.
Yeah. Yeah, Edman, just because, and that's part of why they probably wanted him. It's like, he is a great insurance policy in center, at short, at second. Like, they can move him around when things are not working there. And then I think the other, like, let's do our jobs, Jake. We work in baseball media. Let's have a Shohei Ohtani conversation to kind of end this.
He's pretty good.
This podcast, okay? I know we're, you know, over an hour in, but because I think there's a lot of big questions about Ohtani this year. And now they're over there in Tokyo, and hopefully he won't have a massive scandal involving his interpreter stealing millions of dollars of him leading up to the season. Not that it seemed to affect him very much. The big question about Ohtani is, one way to frame it is, how does he not win the MVP? The other way to frame it is, what does, because of the timeline of him coming back as a pitcher, where he said, the Dodgers said, and he confirmed today, like, they're slowing down the ramp up to that right now. He has not faced hitters yet. He's not going to face them, obviously, before real opening day. We knew that he originally in the offseason, there's like May, we're targeting May for his comeback to the mound. The production, even if everything goes smoothly, the amount of production on both sides of the ball is probably going to end up looking different than it has, just because of the amount of playing time and the amount of innings. What does that look like? When do we see Shohei Ohtani? Because there's really no reason to rush him. They know they want to have him full go in the second half in the postseason. I don't see any reason for him to start a game before June, let alone you could even push that even farther. And what I'm interested about is, obviously, he has always been the guy calling the shots. Like, he gets to decide when he plays, you know, how he's able to balance all of these different responsibilities, physically, mentally, all these things, right? The preparation. I am very curious, once we get to the point where he is starting to come back and actually pitch, because there's no way they're sending him on a rehab assignment. We know he's not going to Oklahoma City and like getting a tune-up. We know that's not happening. How does he work in the build-up to becoming a starting pitcher in the major leagues again? Do they basically have him be an opener for a couple, you know, weeks and just start building up that pitch count so that he doesn't have to miss games as a hitter, because we know he doesn't want to do that? Are they going to try to slow him down? Is he going to say, no, I'm going to play every game no matter what, even if it doesn't seem physically possible for me to actually maintain this stamina-wise? Because, yes, we saw him do it when he was fully healthy, but the actual buildup is a different operation and different kind of process. So I'm just curious, when we're approaching him coming back, let alone what he looks like when he comes back, how does that impact his hitting? How does that impact? Does he miss games? And what do they do with that? I think the fact that he has this two-way player designation on the roster is a big deal, and Andrew Friedman has talked about this, because that gives the team the flexibility to carry the normal number of pitchers while also having Ohtani as this pitcher too. So it's not like a situation where they are burning a pitcher spot by having Ohtani pitching two innings a week as he's building up. Like, they're able to carry all those extra guys to kind of cover those innings as well. But all that whole process and what that ends up looking like, how many innings he throws this year, and does he have fewer plate appearances if he stays healthy? Last year, he had 731 plate appearances. How many innings, how many plate appearances does he have this year is a super interesting question for me.
Over under 103.5. Over. I am most compelled by how high that number goes, how much this team being a juggernaut pisses off every other fan base, and whether a year from now we need to have another conversation about whether the Dodgers are good or bad for baseball.
Their franchise record for wins is 111 in 2022. And I think they're going to threaten it, but we will see what goes wrong. It is baseball, and that is normally what happens. Of course, we could talk for hours about Roki and all these other guys, but we will be doing plenty of that during the season. So there you go. That is our National League West preview. Because you took the under on all these other teams, who do you have? Just to clarify, what is your order of those three teams in the middle? Because you took the under on all three of them.
Here's how I see the division. Dodgers.
They're making the playoffs, yeah.
Dodgers, Gap. Diamondbacks, Padres, Padres, Diamondbacks, Gap. Okay. Giants, Gap, Rockies. Like, I think the Giants are worse than those other two teams in my mind. I think they're easy fourth. I would go Diamondbacks, then Padres. So Dodgers, Diamondbacks, Padres, Giants, Rockies is my order.
There you go.
But I'll be rooting for the Rockies.
Of course. Of course. All right. That's it. We did it. Preview the NL West. AL East on Monday. And I'm going to New York. Got a lot of fun stuff planned next week, folks, including the actual start of the season, Tokyo series, Tuesday morning, 6 a.m. Eastern. I will be at Jake's apartment. We will be up and watching. We cannot wait for those games. Thank you all for listening. Thank you to Colin Brennan for producing this episode of Baseball Barbercast. You can email us at baseballbarbercast@gmail.com. That's BARBcast. And we will talk to you all on Monday.